You are now entering the spoiler zone. The following podcast contains explicit plot details and pockets of profanity. You have been warned. The Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in wine and space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss. Hello everyone, I'm Ken Moss, and a very warm welcome to the annual Exton Moss Experiment Scrapbook, where we sweep up all the scrag ends from Spaff's Nest, polish them up a bit, and give you a filler episode on the cheap. First up is an example of how technically frustrating it can be setting up for a remote recording session, and also what inevitably happens when you put Alan Fogg in front of a microphone.
Right, let's get this show on the road. Connection lost, you're taking the piss. Right, are we back? Fuck's sake. How hard can it be?
Oh, very.
Behave.
We're in for a rough ride tonight.
Stop encouraging
anymore
him.
Before we get started.
Why don't we just knock this TS out?
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound for transsexual?
You're not helping.
For episode 109, we were joined by Alan Fogg and Paul Isles Rush to watch the ITV sitcom Vicious. And naturally, there were some outtakes.
Well, following the success... This is a local gin, isn't it? Following the success of our Stokey Oak Tit... Follow it. The infobollock says. Well, gentlemen, what do we think of the nasal appraisal? Oh, I'm sniffing the microphone.
The microphone smells very fragrant.
One fuck in the grave. All about necrophilia.
Fucking hell.
Episode 111 was a celebration of all the incarnations of Blankety Blank, and also doubled up as a tribute to the late Paul O'Grady. It's unashamedly one of our favourite recording sessions, which didn't help us wandering off topic or yabbering on a bit too long. So here are a few bits that were trimmed out.
Julie Peasgood?
Who?
Oh, Julie Peasgood, possibly not on your radar. She was a familiar face in the 80s and 90s on TV. Very long, very straight hair. I think she became some sort of sex advisor or something in the end.
Yeah, I see who she is. I think she's somebody I recognise as a face from being on things rather than...
A star.
Best known for her role as Fran Pearson in Brookside. So that might be where I know her
from.
I did used to watch Brookside. Played Joe Steadman in Emmerdale. Wouldn't have seen that.
She was in an episode of 2.4 Children. I remember that. But yeah, it will be Brookside I remember her from.
Oh, she's married to Peter McHenry.
Don't know who he is.
He was blokey that was in that Joe Alton thing. Was he Rent?
Oh, I hate
Not Rent. Loot.
Oh, right.
No, Entertaining Mr. Sloan, one where he cops off with Beryl Reed.
Lovely stuff.
Oh, it's a fantastic film. Oh, The Aphrodite Inheritance, opposite Alexandra Bastida, which is great and we should do at some point. And he was also in Victim. He was the one who commits suicide at the beginning.
Right.
Our Victim is a fantastic film, which I suspect hasn't turned up on your radar.
It has turned up on my doorstep. It's in the Exton Moss drawer, but I've not watched it yet.
Yeah, there are a number of things like that. Oh, and he was Charlie Wilder in The Cat and the Canary as well, the Carol Lindley remake.
Have we wandered slightly off topic?
A long, long, long way off topic. Oh, it's from Walsall.
Come on, bring it back now.
This rewatch of old episodes hasn't been sombre. It has been hilarious. It has recognised just what comedy giants, not just Paul O'Grady, but also Les Dawson, because we've spent a lot of time talking about Les Dawson on this, who was an absolute genius of comedy and did drag as well. You know, Sissy and Ada. God, that was funny.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do some Dawson watches. But anyway, I'm going to stop yabbering.
Paul Isles Rush joined us for episode 117, which was a commentary on the Doctor Who story The Horns of Nymon from 1979. To prepare for this, we got whammed, and as a result had a rambling chat about our favourite films that only served to extend the runtime, which is exactly what it's about to do here.
Oh, bollocks. Oh, you have the...
I have it.
Bollocks right. to the...
Improv. We are drinking Four Pillars Spiced Negroni Gin, batch distilled in the Yarra Valley. Stop laughing.
No, I just thought "you have been drinking" would have been great at the end of Dad's Army.
Or Dante's Cove.
No, continue.
You have been drinking, thank God.
The end of Dante's Cove, it will come up with, to be continued, this was not drunk-induced. This really happened.
You really right. have been watching.
Right. We are drinking Four Pillars Spiced Negroni Gin, which is batch distilled in the Yarra Valley. It's 43.8% alcohol.
He's off.
That's nice.
That's quite nice, I've got to say.
It doesn't overdo it with the spice, but it's there. You get a little bit of after tingle on your tongue, which is always nice.
Stop it.
What? Not my fault your innuendo filter has been affected by the things we've been watching tonight. And to be fair, there wasn't any innuendo in Dante's Cove.
It wasn't innuendo, it was just waved right in your face. And I'm still Tracy Scoggins. Anyway, it's all
You
right.
had to look at a penis for about 3 seconds. You will survive.
I've seen one before. I know what they do and they look like. It's...
So do I.
Stop it's it! The pair of you, stop it, you're a shower of bastards.
There are certain films that are supposed to be just the best of their particular type that are so massively hyped, I can't believe they would ever live up to the hype, so I haven't watched them. Well, so I haven't seen Top Gun. I haven't seen The Shawshank Redemption. I haven't seen The Blues Brothers.
I've seen Shawshank, I've never seen Top Gun, I've never seen Blues Brothers.
What, you've never seen Top Gun? Top Gun...
Despite the fact that my business is named after the guy. Yeah. The whole
Gibbs.
Yes. Yeah. I've still never seen it. Because I have never seen...
You're going to do Never Have I Ever? Yeah. Because that's not a good game to play with me. But go on. Give it a start.
Top Gun is... It's not a... You know, like a Gone with Wind. it's not Shakespeare. So,
but it's up there.
It's one of my top three films of all time.
Top three films. Go on.
Oh,
give you a bit of leeway. Top five.
Top Gun. Legally Blonde. It hasn't aged well, but Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge is brilliant.
Yeah, one of the Star Wars films. But possibly
four. Sure.
Yeah, or Empire Strikes Back. And I don't know what the fifth would be. Possibly Planes, Trains and Automobiles. if I was on the spot.
Well, mine would be American Beauty.
Never seen it.
With Niall and I, it's the most fearsome drinking game of all time. I thought I could drink until I played the With Niall and I drinking game. And I was dead and puking my guts out on the laminate floor within 24 minutes. The Fly...
Oh, which one?
Oh, no.
The Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, the remake.
Yeah. Better of the two.
Yeah.
Muppet Christmas Carol.
How did I forget that? Yeah. Oh, what? I've
never seen it.
I can't believe I missed that.
The Christmas film.
Yeah. No, Bell Book and Candle is the Christmas
film. No, it's a lovely film. It's a wonderful film. Muppet Christmas Carol is, without doubt, the best version of that story ever committed
but
to
that
any...
that doesn't mean that it's the best Christmas film, because that's Bell Book and Candle.
No, I'm with Ken, and I'm also gutted that I put one of the... I stand by Legally Blonde. Possibly Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
You see, my love. You start doing Christmas watching in about July.
It's not quite that
There's
bad.
So much you crave. Yeah. My Christmas watching is one film.
Which is Bell Book and Candle. It's beautiful. Bell Book and Candle. You'll explain this better than I will. Go on.
It's a Charles Dickens.
No, it's a 1950s, slightly problematic to a modern audience.
Fuck's sake.
Should it be cancelled?
No. It's Jimmy Stewart, isn't it? Who is immortal, who falls in love with a witch played by Kim Novak. And she just has the most entertaining family. So her younger brother is Jack Lemmon. Her auntie is Hermione Gingold. The problem is, if she falls in love with somebody, she loses her magical powers.
Right.
And she starts falling in love with this bloke. And because it's the 1950s, rather than just saying, we're falling in love with each other and we are going to have a relationship together, it's, I'm falling in love with him, therefore I must give up my entire life to become his wife and the mother to his children, blah, 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 blah. But it is just so much fun. Best Christmas film ever. It's not in my top five.
You've gone on eulogising about that. It's not in your top five.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna place it number five. It doesn't need any explanation. Star Wars Episode 4. What are your five?
My five. Chess Hands. Yes. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Oh, fair dues. Yes. Yep.
Yes.
But I look through a different lens.
The Crow.
Oh, right. Okay.
I love that. I've seen that film so many times. Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. It's a bit campy.
Really?
A little bit. But no, I first saw it when I was a kid. I adore that film.
Gentlemen Prefer Brunettes.
You're not a gentleman.
I am, sir, and so is my wife.
I thought Gentlemen Prefer Redheads, son, as far as this conversation goes. Anyway.
It's Rita Hayworth for me. Anyway, go on.
Oh, Rita Hayworth.
Orson Welles, you swine.
Because we were talking about it earlier, I'm going to put Dark City in.
You've eulogised about this so much, and you've sent me a copy. You've been very
big, kind. Big Finish rip-off and shout out.
With Light City.
City Natural History of fucking awful. And one more. Oh God, only one more film. Bill and Ted. The original Bill and Ted I absolutely love. No, not Bill and Ted. Interview with the Vampire. I love Interview with the Vampire.
What? That's the thing. There was a thing. We did it on Facebook last year, didn't we?
Oh, the ten films.
10 films, then we did 10 books. And as soon as I posted one, I was like, oh, I didn't want that to be in my top 10. It's really hard. But yeah, films like Interview with the Vampire are just completely forgotten about. But amazing film. I put things like Ace Ventura in.
Yeah, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh.
Do you count Nightmare Before Christmas as a Christmas film or a Halloween film?
Both.
Yeah, both. I've never done a countdown of Halloween films.
Sleepy Hollow. Miranda Richardson is just wonderful in it.
She's wonderful in everything.
Johnny Depp's pretty good in most.
Oh, the new Willy Wonka is just so good. I can't watch it. Johnny Depp as Willy Wonka just comes across with a complete paedophile vibe, and I cannot watch it.
But when you read the book...
Which I haven't done.
Everyone hates the new version of the film, but it's so close to the book. The book is incredibly creepy.
The Gene Wilder version, I've got to say, I prefer that film.
Mm.
I think most people do.
Yeah.
The problem is, the Johnny Depp version is more accurate. Now, I don't particularly care for it. They tamper with the history of Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
On the other hand...
And the Umpa Lumpa.
Roald Dahl was a dark writer.
It tells the unexpected. Oh, yeah. Roald Dahl, wasn't it? I'm struggling to think of a bad performance that Johnny Depp's put in. His Barnabas Collins is wonderful.
Barnabas Collins.
He did a film version of Dark Shadows. Fuck, I didn't put in my favourite film of all time.
Which is?
Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Not familiar, explain.
It's really difficult to explain because it's an odd mix of murder mystery, courtroom drama, weird Southern American stuff. There's a bit of transgender drama in there as well with one of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And voodoo and Clint Eastwood's daughter. It has a bit of everything. It is absolutely wonderful.
This year saw the final Brexit special, and in preparation I took the opportunity to give the first two volumes a bit of a polish to tighten up the edits. Here are a few trims from episode 28.
But before we get on to that, we have a couple of traditional things, don't we? And seeing as we've taken a recording break, then it's only fair that we start again with the tonic screwdriver. What are we drinking this time?
We are drinking one that you brought with you, a lovely Limehouse Pink Gin.
Aldi's finest.
Aldi's finest. Now, as always with gins, we just drink it with tonic and ice. There's no garnish or anything. It's quite...
It's very fruity.
Fruity and sweet.
I know, particularly when we have those little taster things that come with the cards, there's all the nonsense about the earthy tones and all that malarkey. That
overtones of concrete mixed with beech wood.
Yeah, mixed with rotting conker or whatever. This tastes of strawberry. There's no subtle undertones of it. This tastes like it's had a few strawberries dunked in it, and it's lovely.
It is, actually. It's a very summery one. I mean, I can imagine drinking this on the terrace after watching a tennis match or a cricket game. It's a sunny summer drink, this one. It's very nice. Probably a little bit more fruity than the ones I would go for. Red berry stuff and cherries and fruits of the forest tend to be stuff that I shy away from like this, but it's very nice. There's nothing wrong with it.
I think it's nice. It's easily drinkable. Mm. It has a nice sort of barky taste.
Don't go all tasting card on me.
No, but you know what I mean. It tastes like those sort of barky spices like cinnamon and all that.
Oh,
all
sorry. Sort of yes, I'm with it. Yes, I know what you mean now.
No, I'm not talking about essence of wood nymph or whatever. Conjures up an entirely different set of images, but...
It all drifts back with you in the gutter.
How shall we leave?
Yeah, vote to remain or leave the gutter. Yeah, I'd actually vote to remain there, I think, on that one.
Oh, look, stars.
Fuck off.
literary reference for you there. Make a note, it doesn't happen very often.
I'll give this a 3. 3 out of 5 Bernards. It's one that I would happily drink if it was put in front of me, but I wouldn't chase after. But it is very nice.
Yeah, I have to be honest. It's a high 3 for me, but it is a 3.
Hmm.
And it is very easy to drink.
It is very easy to drink, actually, to be fair. Having said all that...
It's a good job I brought a full bottle, didn't
you? Yeah. Won't last long. We'll grab a glass and we shall descend into the bowels of Rishton Towers and open the Black Archive. So your choice for the Black Archive is?
In this instance, Out to the Unknown. Actually, Out to the Unknown, it's a massive subject. We do a section in our podcast called The Black Archive, where we nominate things that we'd like to see back in the official archives. And it's a chance to talk about things that don't exist, as well as the things that we watch that obviously do exist. We've talked about a number of different things, and there are quite a few episodes of Out of the Unknown, which was a BBC science fiction anthology series from the mid to late 60s through to the early 70s. First 3 years were predominantly science fiction and produced by Irene Shubik, who had worked on Armchair Theatre under Sidney Newman. And the fourth series was more supernatural. The first and second series were black and white and featured adaptations of classic science fiction stories from Isaac Asimov, John Wyndham, a whole host of then very popular science fiction authors, and also some classic science fiction authors. We've already talked about Level 7 by Mordecai Rochfeld on one of our podcasts. There was also The Machine Stops by E.M. Forster, which dates back to the early days of the 20th century. All but two episodes of the first series survive. Four episodes from the second series survive, and one and a half from the third series. And it's really difficult to think of a specific episode that I would like to see back, because there are so many good stories that were made into it. But what would be really nice, I think, is one of the Isaac Asimov adaptations, because there were a couple of his robot stories, Satisfaction Guaranteed, The Prophet, that were adapted, and none of those have survived. Some of its non-robot adaptations have survived, but none of the robot ones. And actually the robots from The Prophet are the ones that were retasked as the White Robots and the Mind Robber. So
you have mentioned this before, yes.
I think there are a couple of clips from The Prophet. There are certainly a lot of production photos from it. It would just be nice to see the episode.
You've mentioned it before, and it sounds really good. I mean, the Out of the Unknown stuff that I have seen, and the one that's purely from the title alone that I want to see is The Machine Stops. That sounds interesting.
It's fantastic. It's the episode that introduced me to the series of Out of the Unknown. I think I've told you about the event that I went to at the National Film Theatre way back in the 80s called Past Visions of the Future.
You did, yeah.
That introduced me to a lot of classic British TV science fiction, and they showed The Machine Stops there, and it was just
brilliant and remains brilliant to this day.
That needs to be one that we put on the list for the future. I would like to see.
We'll do an Out of the Unknown segment at some point, predominantly focusing on the first couple of seasons. Cause
the black and white ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to go a little bit out of our usual zone. I would like to return to the archives a radio episode of Desert Island Discs. Now, a couple of years ago, there was half of the William Hartnell episode of Desert Island Discs was found, I think from 1965, 66. Desert Island Discs is one of those programmes on Radio 4 that I am very, very keen on. I think it's a wonderful programme. It's an interview style that is lost now, on certainly on vast tracts of television. The William Hartnell interview is, at that point, the presenter was the original creator of Desert Island Discs, Roy Plomley, and his style was very staid and a lot of it was scripted. It did sort of drift away from that at the end. It became more conversational, but it was quite stilted. The interview with Hartnell, it stops just as he gets to the Doctor Who bit, and I would love to hear what his... There's no transcript that I've seen. I suspect there is one out there, but it would be lovely to actually hear him talk about Who, because all the other Doctors are on record having a chat about the time. But Desert Island Discs is one of those, warts and all, you can say whatever you like, you can be yourself on that, and I think that would be nice, rather than an interview performance.
Interesting.
We've talked about drifting into radio for future podcasts. It's not something we've touched on yet, but...
Oh, I think we should.
We should, because...
You need to listen to some ectoplasm.
You've done me the full...
Have you listened to it?
I've not listened to all of them, and it's been so long now, I can't remember a lot about it. But we are both fans of radio and radio plays and spoken word and radio comedy as well.
Oh, around the horns.
I'm quite a fan of the Navy Lark, you know.
I like the Navy Lark.
It's quite samey, but they are good.
I've got the TV Lark somewhere.
I think I've got the soundtracks to the TV Lark.
The TV Lark was a radio show. It was a radio show about them producing a TV show.
That'll be why I've not seen the episode.
There were two spin-offs, weren't there? There was the TV Lark and was it the Embassy Lark, something like that.
Oh, I don't know. Don't know.
I'd have to look it up. Wikipedia is your friend. There was a TV programme, but it wasn't called the Anything Lark. It was HMS something or other. And I think an episode of that was recovered a few years ago.
I'm assuming it wasn't terribly good, otherwise they would have made more of them.
I think part of it is because it's really easy in terms of time to do radio stuff, so people can do it alongside other things. Mm. Whereas if you're doing a TV programme, then you are tied into doing that TV programme.
Yeah.
By the time the Navy Lark was getting towards sort of mid-60s to late-60s, so many of the people who did it were getting to be really big names and had significant other careers. They could put aside an afternoon a week or whatever to do something they enjoyed doing. So you'd get John Pertwee, Ronnie Barker, people of that stature who would go along and doing it because they've been doing it for ages and they got on with the people they were doing it and they just enjoyed doing it. It's like Benedict Cumberbatch doing Cabin Pressure.
Yeah.
He'd never be able to justify the time to do it if it was a TV sitcom. Mm. But with it being a radio sitcom that needs less setup, then he's got the time to do it.
We'll shut the door on the Black Archive now, but I think that's given us food for thought as for a future podcast on radio episodes.
My mind's stuck on HMS Pinafore, which it clearly isn't, but it's something... Was it HMS Paradise?
Again, I don't know. No idea.
We'll have to look that up. It's the same sort of thing as, oh, what's that Jerry Lewis film that was never shown to anybody?
I know the one you're talking about.
The Day the Clown Cried?
Yeah.
Something like that. And I've got a PDF of the script, and it's about a clown in a concentration camp or something. It's...
Well, Jerry Lewis, he himself wouldn't allow it to be released. In fact, I think... I could be misremembering this or confusing it with another film, but I'm fairly sure they're putting together a cut of it, because now that he's gone and there's bits of it missing and some was found in a salt mine or something, it was all very bizarre.
No, the salt mine is Metropolis. The original cut of Metropolis was, I'm sure, found somewhere odd, and that was about 10 years ago, I think. I'm pretty sure that happened while I was at medical school, because one of my housemates at the time was absolutely obsessed with Metropolis. Metropolis is a very good film.
Yeah, it is.
But they were able to recreate the original cut of Metropolis by material that was found, and it was somewhere odd, like a salt mine. That's where that story comes from.
Again,
unless they found chunks of The Day the Clown Cried at the same time. But my recollection was that the whole film existed in Jerry Lewis's private collection, and he didn't allow anybody to see it or distribute it.
Yes, but Heil, Honey, I'm Home, possibly not one that we'll be revisiting if recorded. I'm sure somewhere in the darkest recesses of the interweb it exists, but...
Well, I don't know, we've done Threads.
You keep coming back to Threads, you know. Now that the nuclear winter has settled, I wouldn't mind watching it again.
Well, you'll be on your own. Twice is enough. I wouldn't mind watching Level 7 again.
We do keep revisiting that one, as a...
There's lots of others on Out of the Unknown that we should watch. We should do an episode on Out of the Unknown at some point.
Having smartened up Brexit Volume 1, Volume 2 was also given a damn good buffing, which resulted in a few of the rustier bits falling off Episode 37. And here they are.
Hello, boys and girls. Well, in keeping with the theme, this is another one of our sporadic recordings for Brexit.
Welcome back to the ongoing tedium of Brexit.
It's still going on. So, here we are again, happy as can be. Brexit's still ongoing, general election looming. We're now into December, and the...
I mean, from a historical perspective, to be fair, it doesn't necessarily narrow it down, because it's gone on for fucking ages.
We're now into the second
December 2019, to make it clear, just in case this unending tedium is literally unending.
God, Brexit, goddammit.
Have some more gin.
We're still on different sides of the fence, boys and girls. We are both united in the fact that this has gone on too fucking long. In order to compensate for this...
We have gin.
What have we got for tonight?
We've got Monkey 47 gin, which is a German gin. It's a Schwarzwald dry gin. And I've just been having a look at the info bollocks on the back of this bottle, and it's the most pretentious I have ever read.
Shall we read it out?
Okay. Admittedly, it appears somewhat eccentric to claim that a recipe for gin has the power to unite great British traditions, the exoticness of India, and the purity and nativeness of the Black Forest. And yet, it is precisely this eccentricity that defies the enigmatic and venturesome character of Montgomery Collins, from whom our Schwarzwald dry gin originates. Monkey 47, distilled from 47 predominantly unusual but regional botanicals, such as lingonberries, and blended with natural spring water. That tells you absolutely fuck all, while
being
unbelievably pretentious.
All that is good and pure. Lingonberries.
I quite like lingonberries.
Well, that's Indian for penis. Kama Sutra.
Yet not the berry bit on the end. Lingonberries are a German thing.
Anyway,
info bollocks aside...
It's jolly good,
it's
actually.
It's a 47% gin. Cheers.
Mm. That's quite nice, actually. Mm. That's right.
That's
good,
lovely.
Actually.
That's
very,
actually
very
really
nice,
nice gin. And you can taste the berry in it, but not sort of sweet berry. It's almost a sort of cloudberry.
What the fuck is a cloudberry?
It's a Norwegian thing.
That's completely new on me.
I took a ferry from Bergen up to Kirkenes, and you cross the border of the Arctic. And when you cross the border of the Arctic, there is this thing that they call the Arctic ceremony. And for anybody dumb enough to go and join in with it, it's a ladle full of ice-cold water down the back of your neck. And we didn't bother with that, but they do give you a cloudberry liqueur. And everybody on the boat gets this. So you don't have to have
the water down the back of the neck.
I'd have gone and joined in with this, but Alan's mum had been on this and knew all about it and had warned us beforehand. And the cloudberry liqueur has this sort of slightly bitterish berry taste to it. So yeah, cloudberry isn't just some bollocks that I'm making up. It is an actual thing.
It's very interesting.
I really like this.
Because of the interesting nature, I'm going to give it a 4.
It's a 4 from me as well.
Yeah.
It's all...
It's not 5 territory.
See, we should have done this out of 10, really. I mean, it's too late to go back and do it.
5's enough.
Because this would be a 4.5.
You see, this really should be a 3. It's something that I wouldn't seek out. I would drink it if it's put in front of me. But it's so interesting.
Yeah.
It stands out.
And look how it is in the glass.
It's
really cloudy. I really
looks
like this.
Lots of little Titanic killers in a glass. I suppose.
Yes.
Tell your face. It looks confused. So anyway.
Well, to be fair, you do talk a lot of bollocks a lot of the time.
As I say, Spitting Image has ruined politics, really, from the 1980s onwards by endowing politicians with a level of... Oh, look at those Beryl cups. Aren't they wonderful?
Are they called Beryl?
Yeah.
I was just thinking those green cups are 70s and 80s institutional.
I've got some in my cupboard. It just reminds me of school. The teachers always used to brew up out of a huge urn and they'd have those every... Anyway, we're getting started.
Right. So back to the Anne Clark Diaries. It was a whole series of interchangeable grey men and the back of Margaret Thatcher's head.
Well, yeah, but you've just summed up politics of that and era.
How little interest... I didn't find it interesting.
Episode 118 saw the long-overdue conclusion of the Brexit trilogy after a four-year gap, and this involved us watching a couple of fascinating interviews with Enoch Powell. This led to lengthy comparisons with modern-day politicians and a somewhat unsurprising wander-off topic.
So, Boris Johnson's lies, which you accused me of not knowing anything about.
I did. I said no such thing. I asked you to give me an example of them. Right.
I have examples.
Okay. I don't want...
He was...
Daily Mail examples.
He was sacked from his job in the Times for making up quotes. June 23rd, 2020. Yes, of course, it's perfectly true. Great to have an app, but no country currently has a functioning track and trace app. Huge lie, because there were lots of them around. We were offered some of them for free, and we still channeled over £1 billion to Dido Harding.
Oh, well, it was way more than that.
October 29, 2019. This is getting a bit dull.
Yeah, and they're all statistics and...
Well, they're not all statistics.
Well, they are. They're all percentages, and you can... This is why I don't like stats very much, because you can make stats say anything. And that's what politics is. It's all, yes. On both sides. I just can't stand that sort of politicking.
Our senior politician, the leader of the country, even with statistics, should not be so easily caught out in something that is provably wrong.
Oh, I completely agree. The only thing I would say, I've got sympathy with all prime ministers on this particular point. They're only as good as the information they're given.
That's very true. There are quite a few of these things where there's an email trail that shows that he knows that what he's saying has been false.
The only thing I would say, and I unfortunately know this from bitter experience, it's very easy to be caught on the hop and say things in a hurry. I know it's no excuse, but you get quoted back to you and it's not strictly accurate, but there's no willful misleading. So they can be caught out on the hop.
If it was the occasional example, I would agree with you, but it isn't. Enjoy is the wrong word. I found those Enoch Powell interviews really interesting.
Likewise. I mean, I love political history, and that is one of those landmark moments where it will be remembered and has been remembered, but...
Yeah. Because he's one of those political figures that is kind of pilloried in the same way that Margaret Thatcher is pilloried, in that there is one defining characteristic and you ignore the fact that there were other things going on.
Yes. I mean, look, just exactly what you said about Margaret Thatcher. I do believe, as you said, she believed she was doing the right thing.
Yeah. And I'm very glad that nobody in our current government has the level of ability of either Margaret Thatcher or Enoch Powell. Because I don't think any of our current government have the country's best interests at heart. I think they have their best interests at heart and the financial interests of their mates. But I don't think there's anybody that you can say, you're doing this because you think this is the best thing for Britain.
Rishi Sunak. He has taken some bloody radical steps to keep the country afloat financially. It's going to be a price tag that probably won't be paid off until after we're both dead. But... It would have been very easy to just, no, there's not going to be any financial aid, or much less financial aid for the populace than there has been. Being laid off and paid 4/5 of your salary for doing Sweet Fanny Adams, and people still complained about it. I mean, it's kept the economy moving at a time when really it should have ground to a complete halt. So I'm laying a lot of the financial cushion at Rishi Sunak's door. I don't think anybody else really can take credit for that.
Okay, I'll give you that one. But the bigger players that we see, Boris Johnson, Rees-Mogg, Priti Patel, Dominic Raab.
I can't say that I'm overly impressed with any of the current government. But then again, have I ever been?
But I don't think any of them have the country's best interests at heart. I mean, there are ones that, like Dominic Raab and Hancock, that just come across as puppets.
Mm.
And when you see interviews with Raab particularly, you just think, how the hell did you manage to get into the position that you're in? Even with a little bit of challenge, he cannot do that.
Yeah.
Rees-Mogg hides behind academia and not particularly good academia.
He is. I will say this for much for Jacob Rees-Mogg. Whenever I've seen him cornered in an interview, He has always just very calmly deconstructed whoever he is being either interviewed by or challenged by with solid demonstrable facts. That is all I really want from a politician. I know people call him the haunted pencil and all this sort of thing. Politicians nowadays are judged by the public on how they look. All right, admittedly, there's not, on the face of it, a great deal of talent going on either, but Jacob Rees-Mogg is largely pilloried because of what, on the face of it, is the Victorian academic look, rather than what's going on. So I'm quite surprised that he's not in a higher-up position, to be honest, because he does actually have the capability to do it, and probably the lack of care of what anybody thinks in order to do a job that needs doing.
I suspect he's like Jeremy Hunt in that he doesn't want to be seen to be associated with this current government because at some point it's going to implode spectacularly. Mm. Jeremy Hunt has been very conspicuous by his absence recently. I know he's still a serving MP and turns up to Parliament, but he was a big player. His treatment of the health service I thought was appalling, but it was intelligently done. And everything that he did in the junior doctor's contract and that dispute was designed to destabilise certain bits of the health service to make private medicine more attractive. Mm.
Yes, you see the NHS from quite a different perspective politically, and you can talk about the upshots of what the political decisions are firsthand.
To my mind, particularly the junior doctor's contract, because knowing how NHS, particularly how hospitals work, it was designed to drive your junior doctors away. And at the time that that was coming out, because I'm on MDU mailing list, Medical Defence Union, so that's my indemnity insurance, and General Medical Council mailing list, I'm on the Royal College of Physician mailing list, all of those. And people get hold of mailing lists. And I was getting daily emails, come and live in Canada. These are the things that we can offer doctors with years ahead of them. Come and live in Australia, come and live in New Zealand. These are the things that we can offer you. And lots of people who were just out of medical school and didn't have roots. I know that a lot of people who I was at medical school with who have gone to Canada, who've gone to Australia because of that junior doctor's contract.
Right.
Now, as you get more senior in your hospital career, you spend less time on wards until ultimately you're at the top of the tree, you're a consultant. And most of your work is in clinic doing top-level management. Wards are basically run by junior doctors with senior oversight. I'm ward-based all the time. It's a little unusual for somebody with my level of qualification to be ward-based. What happens if you take away that tranche of doctors or a significant amount of that tranche of doctors who are ward-based? You don't have anybody left covering the wards. You're still going to have ill patients that need experienced oversight, so you pull your registrars back from clinic. The upshot of that, clinic waiting lists go through the roof. Private medicine is a much more attractive option. Knowing how the NHS works, that was very clear. And it's exactly what happened. Jeremy Hunt is not a stupid man. I don't have an awful lot of time for his morals, but I have respect for his intellect.
In episode 120, we watched the science fiction series Star Cops from 1987, and once again, I climbed on the old hobby horse about film versus video, much to Simon's dismay.
It's a chasmic difference. If you watch something like Ark in Space, it's crisp as hell. Watch something like Ghost Light or even Remembrance of the Daleks, it's not quite there.
Yep.
And it brings it a quality and a feel. It just raises it a level above. If you look at some of the dramas that were being made around the time and how much stuff during the 80s was still being made on film, stuff that isn't now particularly high regarded. The Paradise Club, that was something that I never saw one of, but I think that was done on film. And it's only remembered because it's got Leslie Grantham in it. But any number of series or dramas that were done on film, because they were dramas. You look at any science fiction or fantasy or maybe children's stuff that's less well regarded, they're just, oh, take a video camera. Go on, just film it on that. Look at Neverwhere.
Well, you see, you and I disagree on this because I think Neverwhere, the contrast between the video stuff, which is all the London below, and the film stuff, which is all the London above, really works. And it really highlights the difference between the two. So I completely disagree with you on Neverwhere. There are some things that I think would have worked well on film. Yeah. Neverwhere, I think the disjoint actually works in its favor in a way that almost nothing else we can say that about. But you think about something like The Nightmare Man, which was done completely on video.
Yeah.
If it had been all done on film, it would have looked fantastic.
That I agree with you, but I've always disagreed with you on Neverwhere.
But you need to look at something like Nightmare of Eden, which we both agree is a really good Doctor Who story. But that was another troubled production. All the model shots were done very cheaply in a couple of hours on videotape, whereas normally they would have taken 3 or 4 days on film and looked a lot better.
Yes, but the biggest problem that you're pointing out there is the time that they had to do it. Now, I'm not saying it wouldn't have looked better on film, but the big problem was the problem with production and the amount of time that they had to do things.
Oh, no, I agree. And I'll fall back on the same old thing. Sylvester McCoy always said it wasn't particularly on Doctor Who that they needed more money. It was what they really needed to make it look better was more time. And at the time, the culture in the BBC was very much towards science fiction. It's there. We'd rather it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it shows, and it's such a shame.
But it doesn't stop it being entertaining. In an ideal world, would this look better on film? Yeah, it would do a bit. Does it stop it being wildly entertaining? No, it doesn't. Does it make me not want to watch it again? No, it doesn't. I can see where you're coming from, but we've spent an awful lot of time talking about something that I personally think is fairly trivial.
Yeah, I think we're always going to differ on this. My view on film is that it's just, for certain things, in fact, for a lot of things, it is unsurpassed. I think it just raises things to a level that video doesn't. And I think that that's why certain series, Doctor Who's the case in point, is looked at so, or has been in previous years, looked at so risibly, because it's just, it looks cheap.
And, whereas, you know, we could spend a lot of time doing a commentary on, oh, I don't know, Tomb of the Cybermen, and bemoaning the fact that it wasn't made in colour. It wasn't made in colour. I think that there is far more interesting stuff to talk about in terms of the production than I wish this fairly minor technical part of it were different.
To kickstart our Doctor Who 60th anniversary season, we watched Terror of the Vervoids in episode 122. And at some point, Simon decided to introduce me to Aquavit. This was not a good move.
Try that.
Is this the Aquavit?
That's proper Aquavit. That's what I was saying. You see, it's dill and fennel, but there's no aniseed in there, is there?
Oh, God, the fennel. No, no. Canal.
Are we not a fan?
Not a...
sorry. It's not funny.
It reminds me of gripe water. My sister used to drink fennel water when she was a tiny tot.
Why?
I don't know, it was recommended at the time to give to kiddies. Anyway, my sister loved it, but
I quite like fennel tea.
Anyway.
In episode 124, we watched Doctor Who's School Reunion starring David Tennant and Elizabeth Sladen. In this deleted clip, we chat briefly about old companions and also other podcasting projects in the pipeline.
Tegan I'm very fond of, and if that, you were that to spark between her and the Fifth Doctor was great.
If you were to have Tegan as
a manager sort of thing.
Yeah, as basically the site manager and Captain Jack as kind of head of the away team. That could have worked well.
Yeah, because I think by this point she would have matured enough to have calmed down that whiny bitch, don't want to be here, just want to go home. Now that I'm home, I want to go back. I think all that would have probably mellowed. A Big Finish did do one, actually, where he bumps into her years in the future. I think she's suffering from cancer or something. Is it the Reaping?
It's the Harvest.
Yeah, the Reaping, the Harvest, and the Gathering, I think. They were a trilogy.
Yeah, they're the ones that introduce Hex.
Yes.
He was a really good companion.
He was!
I don't know what eventually happened to him, because...
Oh, he's another one that died and came back, I think. I'm ploughing my way through the main range. I think I'm lodged now at the point where Hex has just died. But I know he's in subsequent ones, so presumably gets resurrected. Another immortal companion.
The signal-to-noise ratio just got too bad by that point. And
I don't know by that point where I am in the series. They're starting to come back out of it now. Because there was a period where the stories just didn't engage me at all. It unfortunately coincided with Nick Briggs taking over as main range producer.
What was that appalling one that was a complete rip-off of Dark City?
The Natural History of Fear.
Yeah, that's it. That was bloody awful. they call it Light City. Mm. They don't even pretend they're doing anything other than completely ripping off the...
To be honest, I think it all depends on whether you're familiar with the original material, because I wasn't. It was completely lost on me.
Have you seen Dark City?
No, I haven't. So I don't know anything about it, and oh dear, is that something I need to see?
It is an absolute work of brilliance. I don't say that about very many films, but Dark City is one of my all-time favourite films.
Three-way?
Well, if you're offering. But...
Can that go on the list?
That little aside there we're isn't as filthy as it sounds. We're planning another couple of podcasts, actually, which almost certainly by the time this is released will already have been released.
Yes.
We're going to be doing one called Aural Intercourse, A-U-R-A-L, Intercourse, looking at audio drama. So we'll be talking more about Big Finish on that. We'll be talking about audio comedy, audio sci-fi. There's lots and lots and lots of stuff that we both listen to and both like that we'll be able to talk about. But we're also talking about one with your friend Paul.
Paul Isles, yes. He's a very old friend of mine from school and he's an avid listener to these podcasts and would like to get involved.
He's guested on a few.
But we'd like to get him involved with a separate podcast. So the three of us
are going to look at films.
And there will be a mixture of exceptionally high quality and cheese on toast.
As with many nice ideas, the Three-Way Cinema Club got stuck in development hell. But Aural Intercourse eventually became an entire new series of podcasts focused on audio comedy and drama. It's called The Archive of Audio Antiquities, which you can visit for free through all good streaming websites. For episode 125, we watched An Adventure in Space and Time over a year in advance. But one of these outtakes demonstrates that sometimes there's a certain overconfidence when it comes to planning ahead.
Production values-wise, filming technique-wise, I'm glad they waited till the 50th.
Yeah, although it does mean we should probably have been doing this episode next year.
It's ready for next year.
We've got just over 12 months till the 60th anniversary. That should give even us time to plan ahead. Honest.
Do they know what they're going to do for that?
Yeah, right.
That went well.
Right.
I'm not at the stage where I need glasses, but for certain things now, I think, fuck it, they're there.
Yes.
Like there's a book that Simon's got me for a forthcoming podcast. Mm. It's tiny writing. Pages and pages of tiny writing.
So you'd have been holding it out there still?
It's not even that. I'm not struggling to read. Yeah. It's just day off for your eye muscles. It's just, well...
You're long-sighted, he's long-sighted, I'm short-sighted, so I'd be holding it like that.
I won't even say that there's anything... I'm neither long-sighted nor short-sighted. It's just a case of... When my eyes go tired of
things, do you push it away or do you bring it towards you?
It depends. It really does depend. It depends on the print, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
But it depends a lot whether I'm tired or not. First thing in the morning, I could read things that are in four-point pica. No problem at all.
Mm.
You put that in front of me at 10 o'clock at night and I'd be like... Come on, mate, seriously?
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just the ageing process.
Yes, ageing disgracefully.
I'm trying desperately to deny it's actually happening.
Oh, we all do.
But on that note, boys and girls, we shall cough into the microphone, apparently.
Episode 126 was our final episode of the year, in which we all sat round the TV to watch The Muppet Christmas Carol, poured out the eggnog, and Alan Fogg regaled us with charming anecdotes.
Wow.
Blofeld went to your school.
What are you doing?
Right, whatever you're doing, fucking about with the microphone, stop it, because I can hear everything.
Well, the cat was going
He's
to just smacked
hand,
it so one.
Oh.
I'm getting attacked by pussy.
Well, it is Christmas.
You've got to give everything a try in life, Alan. I know it's been a while.
Been there a long time ago. Anyway, another story.
Yes, well, we've all seen things we might now regret. Threads, A Man for Emily, The Corridor People. But on that note, it's time to sign off. The next few editions see the conclusion of our Doctor Who 60th anniversary season, plus a series of episodes we recorded with other podcasters. Until next time, thanks as always for listening. Ta-ta! The Exton Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com.
or find us on social media.